Bob Joseph. Today is Monday, October 6, 2025. We have not been shut down. We continue to run the way the federal government ought to run, predictably and with high quality, of course. That's what you've come to expect. Government shutdown continues, no end in sight, and that is the story in a nutshell. They can't even run the government. They turned it off because of their petty differences. 607-772-1290, Bob Joseph with you. Coming up next hour, a big debate. Johnson City mayoral candidates will be here in the studio to talk about village issues. The Republican mayor, Martin Maney, and his Democratic challenger, Christina Cherik, will be here in the studio, and we will talk about the next 4 years for the village of Johnson City. A live debate. Still working to finalize a date for a second appearance, live appearance, between Binghamton's mayor, Jared Cram, and his challenger, Miles Burnett. As soon as we get a date finalized, we'll announce that. Let's go to the phones. Dave from Binghamton, you're on the air.
Good morning, Bob. Long time. I was calling because last week I heard the mayor on talking about the parking structure and other things, but obviously I am very concerned about the issue with parking structures in the city. But I didn't hear all of it until I really listened to the news report this morning. And not replacing the State Street ramp after decreasing the amount of parking at both the replacement to Collier over on Holly and the new Water Street ramp decreasing in size. Like, after they demolished, or when they closed Collier Street, there were more permits than there were spaces available. That should show something, that there is a need for parking. And as cities like Ithaca are adding parking and Binghamton is decreasing parking, that really doesn't make sense. Or the argument about no, or the cost is too high, doesn't really hold water, except for the fact that for whatever reason, whoever they continually choose in the Binghamton market gouges or just charges way too much for all the services that might be done for the garage. When the national average was in the low 20s and the New York City average was maybe around 27,000 per space. And the Water Street ramp was about $44 per space, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm not looking at the sheets right now, but the cost here is way too high for upstate New York.
Well, what are we going to do about it? I mean, if that's the way it is, to get another parking garage, regardless of the cost, I'm not sure that the city of Binghamton has the money to build a 50-car parking garage, let alone a 500-car parking garage. We don't have the money.
Yeah, and that's based on two things from what I think. One is planning for it, and the other is the contract with Lays. I still want to say, I don't know if it's LAZ or...
The company that operates it. Well, I don't know the details of the contract either, so maybe the contract needs to be reopened or reexamined or renegotiated. I don't know. I believe city has had a deal with that outfit for decades now, so I have no idea if it's a contract that's in the city's best interest.
It's definitely not, in my opinion. The dollar amount that the contracted company keeps versus what the city gets back to reinvest in the structures, and then also put in a fund for replacing the garages instead of just general fund, I'm assuming. That's one of the biggest issues, is planning for the future and planning for...
No, that's not something that's done here.
Yeah.
No. This area doesn't plan for the future. It's like most businesses don't plan for the future.
True.
I mean, what business do you know that's planning for the future?
That's a good question, yeah.
Yeah, nobody plans for the future anymore. Everybody is planning either for this week, this month, or this quarter. Very few people want to plan much beyond next year. Cities and villages and towns and counties and states and even federal governments do have to make some sort of annual budget plan, but even that can't be done by the federal government. So, you know, the concept of planning for the future is a quaint notion. It just, it isn't done.
Yeah, but it definitely is needed.
Well, it's needed, but who's going to do it? Who among us will start planning for the future?
Hopefully city council and whoever is the next mayor.
I feel like I'm channeling my Ed McMahon.
Or maybe,
thank you, Johnny.
Maybe
that's
even the
funny.
Planning board.
No. Come on, man.
I don't know. It's in the title, planning board.
They lurch from one meeting to another. Barely capable of releasing their agenda before the meeting starts. But, you know, that's what we've come to expect. I would expect nothing different. Also, local planning boards and planning commissions are notoriously secretive and lack transparency. They certainly, if I call any planning department or whatever in Broome County, they won't return the call. They don't want to talk to reporters because they feel that although they work for the people, they don't need to be accountable to the people. So, you know, all agencies, all government agencies in 2025 are very secretive by their nature. They don't want to answer questions from anybody. But, planning commissioners, planning boards, and so on, they feel no need. When's the last time you heard the chairman of a planning board or planning commission on the radio?
I cannot think of any time.
No, not in this century.
Nope.
It's not going to happen. No, you hit the nail right on the head, but yeah, planning, it's not going to happen. I mean, I would love to see it happen. I'd love to see mayors and county executives and governors and presidents start talking more about planning for our future and then actually following through. I see little evidence that they intend to do that.
Yep, definitely. So long story short, we need parking downtown, and the previous mayor and the current mayor thinking we need fewer parking spots, and this time using the cost as the reason why we can't do it. It's not the smart idea for the city.
Well, Mayor Cram mentioned the parking study. He says the parking study revealed much of the crumbling State Street garage wasn't being used during much of the year. Which,
well,
I think that's accurate, and I think in large part because many of the businesses that were operational in downtown Binghamton prior to COVID never returned or didn't return with the same level of staffing. So I think a lot of people who used to use the downtown parking garages are no longer working downtown compared to 5 years ago.
Yeah, but then we get to the two things. He wants to add more market rate housing or other housing downtown. And if you don't have places for people to park, yeah, you want to make it a walkable community. But two things. One is, how do you attract more businesses if you don't have the parking for their customers? How do you attract more people to live there that have cars if you don't have parking for them? And when you have events downtown at the Forum and at the arena and you have fewer and fewer and fewer parking spots, how do you attract acts and people to go enjoy things downtown? You can't if you don't have the parking. So
no, it's true. But again, that's not something they really care that much about. I mean, we can talk about it on a radio program, but give the implication that that's something they are going to care about or plan about. I don't see it happening, but I mean, it could. I mean, I believe in miracles.
Yeah, and my thoughts, if Utica and Glens Falls can do it, you know, build a parking structure and like, okay, and other things will pop up around it, which did happen in Glens Falls. It kind of is happening in Utica, especially across from their beautiful ice rink that they were able to do as well. like, we should not be like, oh, whoa, it's us, we're a decreasing community. Well, it's our own doing if we don't do it correctly.
True, but again, there has to be a political will. And you're the first person I've heard to actually suggest this is something that ought to be considered. Now, if a lot of people suggest that the city needs to plan for growth, significant population growth or significant growth in what goes on downtown for the next 3 or 5 years or the next 10 years, well, then I guess the people at City Hall will adjust accordingly. But again, getting back to my original point, people in planning at City Hall or at county level, they don't work for the people. If they do, they would return phone calls, right?
I would assume so.
Yeah. I don't know what they're doing most of the time. I mean, well, I know some of what they're doing. Some they're doing legitimate planning stuff and working with future or with developers with future projects. So that's part of it. I'm not saying they're not doing perhaps the most important part of their job, but they also are very secretive about it, and they certainly don't feel a need to ever answer questions. If anybody from the city of Binghamton or the county planning departments want to come on the program, they're always welcome. But that's sort of like the police chief. Why would they want to come on the program and answer legitimate questions to explain to city residents what they're doing?
Well, here's to a more open, transparent, and growing community.
Well, yeah, growing community, transparent and openness. It's not going to happen. No, no, at every level since I started. I'm not saying that when I started a few years ago, I'm not saying local, state, and federal government were open and transparent. But compared to today, yes.
Definitely more communicative.
Well, yeah, and more transparent. Did they answer every question? Did they hide some things? Well, yeah. Of course they hid some things that they didn't want to talk about. But at least they returned phone calls. At least they felt some sort of obligation to explain to the people who pay them what we're doing for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to change.
Nope.
Unless you become mayor.
Someday, maybe. We'll
okay.
See.
Stay tuned. If you
have a good week.
If you plan a run in 4 years, come here and we'll interview you. Thanks. It's 9:24. Transparency. My little finger. Oh, goodness. But, it's nice to have a little bit of laughter and levity to start our program this week. Now, the people in planning, I think they, and I don't know that it's necessarily by their choice. They probably, I suppose, have been ordered, directed, not to say anything to anybody. So they probably are working under a gag order. So probably they would like to tell people a bit about what it is they're doing. But they're probably in fear of losing their job if they ever came on the program to explain what kind of planning work they're doing. Hi, WNBF. Good morning. You're on the air. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Good morning there, Bob. Dave from Bestville. Man, we had a summer-like weekend, didn't we, weather-wise?
Oh, it was simply fantastic.
It really was. Hey, Bob, I hope I'm not interrupting or interfering, because it sounds like you are having a pregame show before the game next hour, and then you'll probably have a postgame show, I imagine.
Oh, well, it's not interfering. I mean, yes, next hour we'll talk about Johnson City topics with the mayoral candidates. Martin Maney and Christina Cherik, but you can talk, if you don't want to talk about Johnson City, you can talk about anything else. Aren't you going to bash any particular party? Seems like it's already 20 minutes, 15 minutes into the program, and you haven't been able to bash or blame anybody yet.
Well, give me a minute, Bob. But first of all, I'd like to start by bashing my Yankees. That's what I'd like to do first.
Why? What happened with them? I mean, I know they beat the Red Sox. Then what happened?
You don't know, Bob? They just...
No, I stopped following the Yankees after they beat the Red Sox last week. They beat the Red Sox. As I recall, last Monday, the Red Sox beat the Yankees in the Bronx, and then the next two games, the Yankees were the better team, much better team, in games 2 and 3, so isn't it over?
No, Bob, you know what? A switch was turned on, and all of a sudden, the Yankees could not hit, and they could not pitch. They gave up 10 runs Saturday and 13 yesterday to Toronto. Yeah, they just fell apart.
I'm looking up the score yesterday. So they played up in Canada, apparently. I've been to that stadium. That's a nice park.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So Yankees
13-7.
Scored. Hold on a second. You're getting ahead of me. I'm looking at the box score. The Yankees scored 5 runs in the 7th. So they did quite well. They scored 5 runs in the 7th inning. The previous inning, they scored 2 runs. So Yankees had a grand total of 7 runs and 10 hits. So that's pretty good.
Late in the game, Bob, they were behind 11-0 before they got any run.
Wait a second. Let me look at that. I didn't get down to the Toronto line here. You're right. Let's see. Toronto, 2 runs, then 3, then 6. Oh, my God. Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. They were behind going into...
yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So going into the 6th, you're right. They were behind. Yipes.
Yeah.
What? They were behind... They were behind 12 runs.
11? Was it 12?
It looks like... 11. Yeah, no, it looks... let's see. I'm not good at math. But, oh, no, you're right. Yeah, I guess you're right.
It was
12 runs. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But that's not that bad. I mean, you know, the Rumble Ponies, if it was the Blue Jays playing against the Rumble Ponies, they probably would have come from behind late in the game. If it was this year's Rumble Ponies, they had a knack. They had a knack for winning even when they were behind in some games that seemed unsalvageable. So you're telling me now, because I don't see any score for Saturday, but you're saying that the Yankees lost on Saturday in Toronto?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they lost Saturday, too.
Well,
that's
a shame.
Well,
that's a darn shame. But I mean
Bob,
that. I mean that in all sincerity.
Bob, can I say real quick that you started the show talking about the shutdown? Send all complaints.
Yeah, anybody that we could possibly blame, Dave, from Vestal?
Send all your complaints to Chuck Schumer, Bob.
What about Hakeem Jeffries? Doesn't he get any complaints?
No, because...
because he's from Binghamton and we like him.
Schumer's holding back senators from voting on it. That's it. Hakeem doesn't mean anything anymore.
As long as you're... Yeah, you know, Charles Schumer, and I love him like a senior senator, but I will say this, there's no need ever to criticize Hakeem Jeffries because he's one of us. He's from Binghamton.
Do you see he started wearing sombreros and grew a mustache? Did you see that? Have you noticed that? Bob?
No, I haven't.
No? You haven't seen any pictures of that? Pretty funny, Bob.
No, it's not. It's not funny. It's sick.
He looks good. Oh, come on.
It's sick. It's not funny. That's sick.
It's fun.
No, it's not fun. That's fun. Like, I'll tell you, it's fun. Like those cookie cutter Saturday morning cartoons that they used to run. That's the kind of fun that is.
Bob, sitting in class, did you ever draw a mustache in your book on a face?
No. No, I never did. Did I doodle? Yeah. Did I ever draw a mustache on someone? No.
No?
It's not fun. It's like Ted Mack's original amateur hour.
I can remember those days, Bob, doodling and doing stuff like that.
Well, doodling is one thing. Mocking one of the nation's up-and-coming leaders, especially someone from Binghamton.
He's not from Binghamton, Bob.
He's from Binghamton University. He may have been educated, at least in his younger years, elsewhere, but he got the essential education that he really needed to be a future Speaker of the House and maybe a presidential candidate down the road. He got that education at SUNY Binghamton.
Bob, before I go, I need to ask you, what do you think about ICE agents being physically attacked and they say that they don't need the National Guard come in?
I'm against the violence. It's time to put an end to the violence in America. It's time. The National Guard should stand down. Local police agencies augmented by state law enforcement officials can handle these things. If individual communities or states need assistance, they'll call for it. Appreciate your comments, though. Thank you, Dave. It's 9:32. It is Monday morning on WNBF. I'm Bob Joseph on your radio, 607-772-1290, WNBF, live. 9:36 at the Big N, WNBF, the biggest and best radio station on Court Street. Sunny today, high 82, mostly clear tonight, low 58, partly sunny tomorrow with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high 78, and mostly sunny Wednesday, high 64. Right now, 54 in downtown Binghamton at News Radio, WNBF. Coming up from 10 to 11, the mayoral candidates for Johnson City will be here at the studio. It's a debate, live and local. Martin Maney and Christina Cherik will be here. We'll talk about some issues for people in Johnson City. Good morning, you're on the air. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Well, good morning, Bob. My first name is John, and I'm calling from Binghamton, New York.
Are you a first-time caller?
No, that's, I can't, oh, I know, I do remember the first time I called. No, I'm not a first-time caller.
Well, thank you for being one of the many satisfied callers who decide to try their luck again. What's on your mind?
Well, do you have $5 million I could borrow, Bob?
Huh. No.
No?
No, I wish. On the other hand, even if I had $5 million, I wouldn't loan it to anybody. I mean, I trust you, John, but I wouldn't loan it to anybody. Well relatives, but just...
October 13th.
Why?
In the Broome County Courthouse.
Uh-oh.
There will be a beginning of the greatest free speech lawsuit Broome County's ever seen. A gentleman... suing me for $5 million, Bob, plus attorney's fees. But guess what, Bob? We filed a anti-SLAPP motion, and we're going to try to get this meritless case thrown out as fast as possible.
You want the case? Stuff. You want the case tossed?
Sure, sure. Because it has no merit. This gentleman is a public figure who has more followers, if you can believe it, than Tom Brady.
Well, I can believe that, but I don't want to tell you why. Well, you know, we'll see. I mean,
but
is this going to be on? Will the proceedings be on Court TV?
The legal press has already expressed interest in this particular the allegations. 50 exhibits, Bob. 50. A lot of it emanates from Syracuse, in that area there. I'm sure it will be covered because the First Amendment is now bigger than ever, and trying to quench the free exchange of ideas and people's right to comment on current events that affect them is of interest anyway. So we're going to see what goes on. But I'm really fighting for what's left of the local media around here. It's not just that budgets have been cut and that the reporters are inexperienced, because a lot of young reporters have the will and the to go after a story. It's the chill that is in the air, and it's been in the air for a long time here in the tier, that stories... We can only have favorable news. We can't.
But that's true in most markets. It's even true in major markets too. Don't kid yourself. Most media outlets are disinclined to step on toes.
Well, even
dare I say, the fabled New York Times in some cases is reluctant to step on certain toes, and that's a fact. It's not just in Binghamton or Birmingham or Biloxi. It's in New York, Chicago, and L.A. and Miami. So,
well,
you know, good luck getting the media infrastructure somehow to change. And look, it's going to get worse. I'll tell you one of the reasons. And we're going off on a tangent now, but since we're talking about the ability of the media to cover stories that might make some people unhappy, look at the lawsuits that major media organizations have been facing, you know, with Donald Trump suing media organizations and suing YouTube. And, you know, that's a slippery slope. When people, and actually, what the point here is, people who are billionaires or people who claim to be billionaires, they enjoy suing people, whether it's individually or companies, because they know that litigation, any kind of litigation, is expensive. And so look at the deals that CBS and ABC made, and YouTube and other organizations with the Trump with Trump lawsuits. So don't think that anything is going to change because of, yes, we already knew that we are living in a litigious society, and people with a lot of money feel inclined anytime that something, a story is reported they don't like, there's an initial inclination to sue. And unfortunately, that has a chilling effect on everyone. You can't tell me that the settlements, even the settlement that Fox News had to make with, you know, for false reports about the 2020 election. These lawsuits, whether some, many, appear to be frivolous, some appear to be valid, with people with valid claims, every time there's a settlement, whether it's a $14 million settlement or a $787 million settlement, it affects the media's ability to report on anything that's remotely sensitive.
Now, I think that the last lawsuit that I can recall where the media was sued around here was the press and a television station being sued by the promoter of the BC Open. That's the last one that I.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm not really familiar with the sordid history of local media litigation. I'm just saying that the bottom line is the bottom line. Media organizations, whether it's CBS or ABC or the New York Times or the Washington Post or YouTube, can ill afford litigation. And the fact is, people who have a lot of money, and this has been going on really especially for the last decade. It's not as though it didn't happen prior to 10 years ago. But just look at the number of media lawsuits that have happened over the last decade. And in some cases, there was one high-profile case where a guy who was a billionaire used his big stack of money to ultimately shut down a media organization. So that's what media organizations are up against right now. So, well, you know, again, you make it sound as though there is something unique to Binghamton, when I'm telling you it's pervasive across the country, even around the world. What media organization can afford to step on someone's big toe if they're a billionaire?
Well, I think it is. I don't think, for example, you can compare Binghamton and Broome County, say, to Scranton. They seem to still, the newspaper anyway, seems to still have that old school.
A little, not as much as they used to. They're under new ownership, too. Well, just because they're not Gannett. Look at most newspapers, whether you're talking Scranton or Syracuse or Harrisburg or Albany, they don't like litigation. Nobody likes litigation except for the attorneys. The attorneys make a lot of money off lawsuits, whether they're representing someone who filed the lawsuit or representing someone who's defending against a lawsuit. So, of course, the attorneys are going to win. Well, but these cases are clogging up our legal system.
Do you remember when that sportscaster from Syracuse, he was on his way to moderate fame, got fired? And then it came out that Jim Boeheim had an interest in the station.
Well, yeah, I vaguely remember. But there again, that was the whole thing. Whether it was in Syracuse or anywhere in central New York or upstate New York, you say or do something against the legendary Boeheim at your own peril.
Well, all I can say, Bob, is I'm in there fighting for people.
Well, good luck. I hope justice prevails in this case, but again, to imply that somehow media coverage is going to be better in Binghamton or anywhere else, depending on how the case goes, I'm telling you, hey, we're living in a bad time. And one of the biggest problems right now when it comes to the threat of media litigation is Donald Trump. I'm not saying Donald Trump plans to sue any Binghamton media organizations because it's just not worth his time. But look at the lawsuits he's threatened and look at the actions that the Federal Communications Commission has threatened against comedy shows.
Hey, do you remember Bill Kopal?
Yes.
Okay. Well, when Bill Kopal, I think he went to Virginia or somewhere, when they were doing an interview with him, and he was talking about his background, and he did mention Channel 12, and his comment was, well, we covered too many tea parties up there.
Hey, that's local news. You know, again, I'm aware of a few, precious few local news operations that actually have someone who is in a position where if he steps on prominent toes, the station might back him up. I can think of one person right now, and I don't know if he still is in that position. The problem right now with the media landscape is companies are continuing to reduce cost, and the last thing they want is someone who has a lot of money to file a lawsuit. And as I said, that applies even if Walt Disney Company can't afford a lawsuit and is forced to settle with Donald Trump. You know, that explains it, or helps to explain what's going on. I appreciate your call. It's 9:49. You're listening to WNBF, WNBF Live. It's 9:52. Good morning. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll be talking about the future of Johnson City, looking ahead to the next few years with the candidates for mayor who will be with us in the studio. So that's a live debate, still waiting to finalize the date for the second debate with the Binghamton mayoral candidates. When it happens, I'll let you know. So we're trying to lock it in. We were saddened on Friday to learn about the death of Arthur Jones, Union Endicott High School graduate, and went from upstate New York to win a Super Bowl with the Ravens of Baltimore. Arthur Jones was only 39, and he died on Friday morning at his home near Syracuse. Syracuse.com has reported that, according to the Onondaga County Sheriff's Office, Arthur Jones had a pre-existing heart condition and a pacemaker. His defibrillator went off Friday morning, and that alerted his doctor. So emergency responders arrived at his home near Syracuse, Onondaga County, just before 11 o'clock Friday morning. But Arthur Jones had already died. So our condolences are extended to his family. It's so sad to lose someone of his talent and his skill at such a young age. So again, our hearts go out to the family of Arthur Jones. And he was, as am I, a graduate of Union Endicott High School. So, fellow Tiger. And we lost him on Friday. It's 9:54. I'm Bob Joseph. You're listening to WNBF. It's 9:58. Nikki in Johnson City. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing today?
I am well.
I wanted to know, are you familiar with the how to cook a frog theory?
Right.
You are familiar with it then, right?
Well, basically.
You know, it's much easier to take the pan to the pond and put them on low than to grab them, carry them back, and put them in boiling water.
Yep.
So my question to the viewers are, what kind of frogs are we? Because we're getting cooked. So are we the kind of frogs where we go, this is not the pond that we've been living in, and the water is really, really hot. Something is very, very wrong right now. Or are they the kind of frog that goes, well, you know, it's not too bad. It's a little different, but no, we're good. This is okay. Yeah, this is exactly what we need.
An excellent question that maybe our viewers ought to consider, given what's transpiring in America.
What kind of frog are you, Bob?
Well, I am not going to get personal, but I do. You've given me food for thought. I'll certainly consider that tonight when I'm trying to get to sleep.
All right, Bob. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah, thanks. That's very interesting concept that I think every American should consider tonight when you're trying to get to sleep. Think about it. Who knows if you'll be able to get to sleep if you think about it. Coming up next, we'll talk live with the candidates for mayor of Johnson City. A debate. I'm Bob Joseph.
News, talk, and information for Binghamton and Central New York. This is News Radio, WNBF, Binghamton, a Town Square media station.
I'm Bob Joseph. You're listening to WNBF on a Monday morning. And coming up, we will have a debate with the candidates for mayor of Johnson City. That's coming right up on this Monday morning, so stay tuned. We'll be talking about the issues facing the village of Johnson City next here on WNBF and WNBF.com. It's Monday morning, October 6th. I'm Bob Joseph. We are pleased to have the candidates for mayor of Johnson City in our studio. Republican Martin Maney and his Democratic challenger, Christina Cherik, welcome back to WNBF.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having us.
So we'll have sort of an informal discussion of some of the issues facing the village of Johnson City right now. I'm going to ask each of you to give a brief introduction. And Mayor Maney, I'm going to ask you to start first, a minute or so, a little bit of background and why you want to remain mayor of the village.
Well, again, Bob, thank you for having us here this morning. Thank you for Christina, you know, for coming out as well. I appreciate that. I'm a lifelong resident of Johnson City. I was 26 years. I served the village as a firefighter in Johnson City. I did 5 years as trustee before becoming mayor. I'm in my fourth year of my first term. I hope to get reelected. There's been a lot of changes in the village over the last 4 years, a lot of positive changes. You know, nearly $20 million in grant money has been brought in. Over nearly 11 miles of road has been resurfaced and rebuilt. And the development at the mall, which is now the Commons, over 550 apartments that are online or slated to come online, two daycare centers, the hospital being rebuilt. Our partnerships with SUNY Binghamton and UHS are things that I'd really like to continue to further and hopefully benefit the village in the future.
Christina Cherik, why have you decided to run?
Well, good morning. Good morning to everybody listening at home, and thank you to my opponent for agreeing to do this. I have been, a third-generation resident of Johnson City and grew up right here in the Ukrainian community where I'm still very active, and that community taught me community service and what real leaders do, or they're the ones that are picking up the folding chairs and picking things up and cleaning things up, and that's kind of what I emulate. I love this village, I really do, but I've learned that love of place isn't enough. We need public servants who serve the public. And so as I've been out meeting with residents, knocking on doors, one consistent thing that comes up is the lack of accessibility and lack of communication from Village Hall. And so that's something that I'm committed to changing as mayor. I'm committed to making Johnson City a place where generations of residents can truly thrive.
Let's talk about some issues now. One of the overriding issues in every community these days, maybe always, is the matter of crime. I'm going to pose the question first to you, Christina, in terms of dealing better with crime, whether it's violent crime or relatively minor criminal activity. What changes or what initiatives might you consider pursuing in the village if you become mayor in January?
Sure. That's so important, and something else that I've heard from residents. We're not a particularly violent village. There's a considerable amount of property crime that exists. And so I'm already proud to have been partnering with our new canine unit in the police department and supporting the initiatives for ongoing training. But public safety is more than just police and first responders. It's everything from our great DPW who do such a good job of keeping us all clean and safe. And, everybody's jealous of Johnson City because of our DPW. There are other things that certainly can be done. Simple things like extra lighting in certain areas, perhaps some additional cameras for surveillance issues, but certainly more community engagement and building a stronger community.
Mayor Maney, what additional steps might you encourage going forward beyond what's already been done to address whether it's violent crime or more petty crime in the village?
Since I became mayor, we've partnered with Binghamton University, and they fund our community police officer, Jay Peets. He does a great job, and since he's taken over, he's walked up and down Main Street multiple times, knocking on doors, talking to people, and we've seen a huge drop-off of any type of loitering and malingering on Main Street. We're making a more safer and walkable community. We want to continue to do that. We're strengthening our laws and our codes to make sure that certain behaviors are not going to be tolerated in the village, because once we start with the small crimes, the small behaviors, they seem to escalate, and we're trying to stop that now. We don't want it to escalate. We don't want to see a corner become a gathering place for people that want to carry on illicit activity. It's just not right, and it's not what we have. We've done a lot to clean up the village. We continue to do that. We have a group that's called SEPTED, and that's where all the department heads and myself meet monthly to discuss problem areas, problem issues, and we come up with creative ways to solve these problems. We'd also like to see the state possibly get involved as well, because mental health is probably the largest problem we have in the village as far as crime goes. We need to get these people help. We need to get them someplace where they can seek help, where they can seek counseling, where they can be safe. And I think that the state needs to step up their game to help us with this endeavor.
And to that end, when we talk about some mental health issues and sometimes substance abuse issues, in many cases, those issues contribute in large part to the matter of homelessness that we're seeing here across the county. It's been in the news headlines in the last 2 or 3 weeks, especially here in the city of Binghamton, but it's a problem that's really grown all across our region, say, over the last few years. What new initiatives might be taken in Johnson City to deal with those who are unhoused? Mayor Maney, I'll ask you to respond to that question first.
Again, Bob, we need to partner with the state. We need to partner with the county. The county has over $100 million dedicated to social services. We don't have that type of budget. So we need to make better partnerships with the county and with the state. And again, we've shuttered Broome Developmental Center. We've shuttered State Hospital. These were safe havens for a lot of these homeless people. And they've been regulated to living on the streets, which is not fair to them. They're being dehumanized because they're not receiving the proper treatment. So again, strong partnerships with the state and the county to open up these centers again so we could get these homeless people off the streets, get them into places where they feel safe, where we could hopefully educate and get them out so they could get jobs and no longer be a homeless person.
Christina Cherick, in terms of helping those who are unhoused, what do you think Johnson City might be able to do better?
Well, this is very close to home because the work that I do now is in prevention and prevention education. You know, I would definitely agree that more partnerships need to be created between Johnson City and the county and the state, and part of that is just showing up. And so if you ask some of our other local elected officials, they may tell you that there has been a lack of presence from Johnson City at these meetings where funding is available, where resources are available, and that is something that I find just unacceptable and something that I'm committed to be at the table for. I also find it difficult to understand why the village would have voted to zone out any prevention sites in our I corridor, so that's along Main Street and then the big business district, when the state was offering to partner with us on those things. And then most recently enacting some very strict anti-loitering laws that, you know, you could spin it to say that, you know, this is a public safety issue, a public health crisis. People deserve to have access to our parks and to bus stations and to get to where they need to go. And so when industry fails, it's the role of government to step up and support residents who are the most vulnerable.
Mayor Maney, your response?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to, if you could give me what agencies has reached out to the village, I'd appreciate that, because as far as the mental health, that has not been addressed. I meet regularly with Assemblywoman Lepardo. I've met with Senator Webb. They've offered assistance in funding, getting funding for us for different things, but that's as far as that's gone. As far as the legislation for the loitering, is it fair to somebody, a family man or family woman or family, that wants to wait in a kiosk at a bus stop but can't because somebody's living in there? Is that fair to them? Is it fair to these families that want to use our parks to have to witness illicit activity? It's not fair to them. And the state did not approach the village of Johnson City for any type of funding for any type of injection center. We do not believe that with the revitalization going on Main Street that that's a good spot for it. So we created a zone for it, which is on a bus route, which is in an industrial center, where if this ever comes to fruition from the state, that there's an area in Johnson City for it.
Ms. Cherick?
It just seems that there's a lack of care and lack of hospitality overall coming from the village. I've seen cherry picking on issues that, you know, perhaps address neighborhoods that are more affluent, where code is being enforced, and other areas of the village where things just go uncared for. And that's not right.
We're talking about Johnson City issues with the mayor, Martin Maney, and his challenger, Christina Cherik, on this Monday morning. Let's talk about blight. Johnson City, like most of the communities around here, is an older community. Lots of older homes, older commercial buildings, older industrial buildings. Some are still in use. Many have been abandoned. And they have become attractive nuisances. Christina Cherik, what, in your view, can Johnson City do to address the areas, whether it's in neighborhoods or commercial districts or places that were home to industries, what can be done to deal with the buildings that are in bad shape, even if they're still in use?
Yeah, I think we have to move away from the idea that somebody is going to come in and save us. We have enough talent and enough good ideas right here in the village where we can put these properties to use and really revitalize them. There are other communities in our area who provide these kind of pop-up artists, experiences where people can rent these buildings for maybe a month at a time, and it's not a long-term commitment, but it's just something to get people more excited about coming downtown. There's other initiatives just like window decorating and trying to make things look a little bit nicer for people who are coming downtown. I mean, I've been talking to considerable number of our Main Street businesses, and they all have the same kind of concerns that if people don't have access to them, then, you know, they can't make their overhead. So I really want to support our Main Street businesses, beautify the space. You know, I've said if Binghamton is the parlor city, there's no reason Johnson City can't be the garden city.
Martin Maney, what are your thoughts on doing more to address blight, whether it's in residential areas, old commercial or industrial buildings? What can be done?
Well, quickly, the DRI, we did receive a $10 million grant to help revitalize downtown Johnson City. There's multiple murals downtown in Johnson City. There's smaller murals throughout the village on the boxes that they use for traffic control devices. We've strengthened our codes. We put a code into place for vacant storefronts in the business districts where they have to be clean. They have to be presentable. They can't be papered and painted. And those citations are now going out to these businesses that still haven't subscribed to that. We have a zombie properties, where we control zombie properties and vacant properties of vacant property registration, where we're trying to incentivize the landlords to get people in there. Binghamton University has partnered with us where they have a $10,000 grant program that they give to first-time home buyers who buy in a certain area of Johnson City. And we want to help them expand that program. Again, it's, you know, you see the blight, and it takes time. The village didn't deteriorate overnight. It took a long time, and we're slowly growing out of the deterioration. We're slowly growing out of the blight. We've got to continue that upward movement.
Christina Cherik, a response?
Yeah, I think we need to also do a little bit more work in inclusivity and inviting folks to really become a part of this decision-making process, a part of the conversation about what residents want Johnson City to look and feel like.
It's 1022 WNBF talking Johnson City this morning. One of the biggest factors in a transition in the village of Johnson City over the last decade is Binghamton University, a dramatic change. I call it the Corliss Avenue Corridor. Somebody who left Johnson City 10 or 15 years ago and came back would be shocked to see what that area of the village looks like now. Martin Maney, what is your thought about the relationship that Binghamton University has with the village of Johnson City? Would you like to see any changes, anything that BU could do in addition to assist the village because of its growing presence?
We have a tremendously wonderful relationship with Binghamton University. President Stanger, and I'm going to have the opportunity to meet his successor later on today, which I'm looking forward to. They've embraced the Johnson City community like it's their home. The students have embraced the Johnson City community like it's their home. And I'd love to continue that relationship. I would love to see expansion. Due to Binghamton University's presence on the Corliss Ave corridor, which I like, we're seeing growth in our downtown. We're seeing the students live in the downtown area, which is really important. They're going to start going to the businesses. I mean, Soul City is always crowded. thanks to Binghamton University, again, since they've got such a presence in Johnson City, we're seeing a revitalization. They're helping with the Southside community with the $10,000 investment grants. They are giving us $100,000 a year, and that is what they've taken off the tax rolls. That's we have a partnership with them. What they have removed from the tax, the property tax rolls, they have given to us every year in a $100,000 grant, which funds the police.
Christina Cherick, what are your thoughts on Binghamton University and the current relationship it has with the village of Johnson City, and looking ahead the next few years, whether any changes ought to be pursued?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Binghamton University. I earned one of my master's degrees there, and I'm happy to see the nice new shiny buildings coming into Johnson City. But I have friends who are students in the nursing school and in the pharmacy school, and they don't really access the rest of the village. I mean, they have everything that they need right in their buildings. There's a Starbucks right in there, so why should they come out? So it's a lot more about community building. It's a lot more about creating some more buy-in and just creating a neighborhood effect for the students, for the employees, to really access the wonderful resources that we do have in Johnson City. And, you know, also I'd like to learn a lot more about the kind of pilot programs and grants that have been given. I think there's a lot of work to do that can strengthen Johnson City because of the relationship that we have with Binghamton University.
One of the things that some Johnson City residents comment on with the growth that we've seen from Binghamton University and the growth that continues with United Health Services, including the recent completion of the main tower project on Main Street, a lot of property over the last several years has been taken off the tax rolls. And what that means, whether it's BU or UHS, those properties that are no longer producing tax revenue, that means ultimately some higher taxes for other property owners. Christina Cherick, what are your thoughts about that, as significant numbers of properties, including the former Gannett building that, yeah, that was used for 12 years to print newspapers and then no longer. Ultimately, now that's in the hands of BU, so it's off the tax rolls. What are your thoughts about the fact that a significant number of properties in Johnson City that used to provide tax revenue no longer do that?
Yeah, it is a delicate balance. And, you know, I love creating these partnerships, and I've worked in coalition building, and I think it's hugely important. But ultimately, you know, Johnson City does deserve its fair share in return. So, you know, somebody who's worked in the education world for over 15 years, I'd love to create some more collaborative partnerships with our school district and see what kind of opportunities that we can give our students and adults that work in the village directly related to the work that's being done at Binghamton University and at UHS.
Mayor Maney?
Yeah, I don't understand what that has to do with pilots and financing and getting money back for properties that come off the tax rolls, but at any rate, we do work with UHS. Since I became mayor, we started a program where they give us a $50,000 grant a year, and they also supply all of our diagnostic testing for new hires, for any type of drug testing, and for the firefighters who need a pulmonary function exam so they can wear an air pack every year, which amounts to about another $50,000. It's a small drop in the bucket from what they would be paying if they were assessed. But it's a partnership that we started, and we're going to continue to grow that. And we're still going to continue to work with Binghamton University as they take properties off the tax rolls, talk to them to see how much they can increase the funding that they're giving us. Because, again, it's a partnership, and we've developed relationships, and we're moving forward where we're gaining revenues from the nonprofits that we never had before.
Talking about Johnson City issues with the Republican mayor, Martin Maney, and his Democratic challenger, Christine Cherick, on WNBF on this Monday morning. Touched a bit about Main Street a few minutes ago, and one of the things that I, as an outsider, I've never lived in Johnson City, but I travel through Johnson City and spend a fair amount of time every week in the village. One of the things that has disappointed me over the years is what Main Street in the village looks like now compared to what I remember when I was a kid. It's far less than vibrant than it used to be. And you've mentioned there are some small businesses that have helped to change that. What else can be done to encourage more business and just an overall better picture of the downtown business district compared to what it's looked like, say, the last 5 or 10 years? Mayor Maney, I'll start with you.
Well, again, everybody sees the storefronts on Main Street. That's huge. What they don't see are the apartments that have been renovated and revitalized and getting a high dollar amount for rent. And they're occupied right now. So it's the balance with the landlords, the property owners. Do we, it's the chicken or the egg. Do we open up the storefront and then hope somebody moves in? Or do we get people move in so then we could market it as, look, we have a sustainable population down here. They're all walking in this area. So you've got a large group in which you could offer services to. That's another reason why we came up with our Main Street, the business district code, to make sure that these vacant storefronts look good, they look vibrant, because we need to have them look vibrant. We need people to know that they're available. And it is not a punishment. It's to incentivize the landlords to get tenants in there and to market it. Personally, I reach out 3 or 4 times a week. I reach out to somebody to say, hey, listen, we've got these spaces. Come take a walk. Come take a look. And oftentimes they do. But it's, again, I don't know what the landlords are asking for rent, what their vision is. We've had some great people come in. Dave Whalen just took possession of another property. It's going to be his third property at Main Street, and he's got a vision for that. So we're building partnerships with that. But it's, again, it's a slow process, like I stated. Both of, when I grew up in Johnson City, it was vibrant. All the shops were open. And it took us a long time to get there. And everybody wants to see, we want instant gratification in our country right now. We're not going to see that on Main Street. We're going to see it over time. We just have to keep moving forward.
Christina Cherik, your thoughts about improving the eye appeal and the business appeal of Main Street?
Yeah. Well, a beloved teacher of mine gave me the biography of Mr. Johnson. So that's very near and dear to my heart, because when my grandma came to this country, she worked for EJ. And I hear all the stories about folks who built this village, who had these opportunities because there was industry and there was, you know, exciting shopping opportunities, which, you know, who's not a fan of that? Main Street is so important to not just Johnson City, but it's a connecting route from Binghamton all the way down to Endicott. And I'm glad my opponent mentioned the walkability, because right now the needed infrastructure improvements are happening, but it does make driving quite awkward. And so I presented, based on my conversations with many of the downtown business owners, a petition to the village for temporary free parking, just to help folks who might not know about those, you know, hidden spots. The business owners were very grateful for that. We've had many discussions about that, but the village just kind of ignored it. So, you know, we have to be a little bit more hospitable, not just to the business owners that are already there, but folks that are coming in from different villages.
Mayor Maney, your response.
Yes, with the anticipation, what was going to happen on Main Street with the construction, with it's part of our streetscapes project, 243 Main Street's the old village hall. Right behind that is a large parking lot. And since April, 3 hours of free parking has been made available to all the guests and visitors at downtown Johnson City. So we do have free parking. Her petition said around the downtown area. We had already established that. And also with the development next year of Wilboro Alley, that's going to be something hopefully that draws people, again, into the downtown area. That's our vision. That was something that we applied for with the DRI, is to beautify Wilboro Alley, close it off to traffic, and make it a gathering spot. So hopefully that'll bring the students up from Corliss Ave to Wilboro Alley and then to walk Main Street.
Talking with Johnson City Mayor Martin Maney and his challenger Christina Cherik. We're going to take a brief break and then talk about more Village of Johnson City issues on this Monday morning. This is WNBF. Let's go back to the busy, busy phones. Jesse and Owego, you're on the air.
Good morning, Robert. Manic Monday is on. Now, you brought up a very interesting subject, and that concerns the Herschel merry-go-round. And I remember that very well. I used to ride on it. I was actually hoping, like I said, hoping it'll never happen. But I wish that they had relocated that to the former I don't know, Lockheed Martin, IBM, Loral, put it in that park where it belongs. It's high above the flood zone. It would be the best place ever. There's plenty of room. You got a pond nearby. Because back in the day, IBM used to have IBM fair days there. Hot dogs, hamburgers.
Well, why doesn't Lockheed Martin do that? Don't they have any money? I looked at the annual report for Lockheed Martin. They're making money hand over fist. They could have a family day at Lockheed Martin or a community day. And not just hot dogs and hamburgers. I'm talking ribeyes. Come on, lamb speedies. This is Lockheed Martin. They're making zillions of dollars with presidential helicopters and all the other fine programs they have at Owego. That would be one way that they could show the community that they don't care about that guy from News 10 Now.
Well, I know. You know, maybe I'm asking way too much, but that's the least they could do for us and keep that merry-go-round in Tioga County where it belongs. That's all I'm saying.
All right. We'll put that out there. We'll see what the other viewers have to say.
Well, I do have one more question. What do you know about what's happening at the Bundy Museum?
Not too much.
It's really bothering me.
Well,
it's bothering me. Last I heard, they're closing up shop, and I think that was the best museum for Broome County, maybe even part of Tioga County, live and local broadcasting from way back in the day. Why can't we just all get together and relocate all of that stuff right next to the Marconi Tower?
Because it takes time and money.
Well, I will offer my services. Let's put it that way. If I got to run a U-Haul and help out in any way, I'll do it.
Well, that's a good thing. So that's a start. But it requires even more people to make it happen. And it would need an actual physical facility where you could put all that stuff.
Well, that's true. Maybe somebody out there has some ideas on how this could possibly happen. I just think it needs to be preserved, Bob.
I agree. I don't know what'll happen to it. They better not put it in some kind of dumpster.
Well, if anything, they can bring all the stuff to the Howard Mansion. I will gladly store it for them.
All right. Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate your call. 11:15 here at WNBF. Good morning. You're on the air. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, good morning, Bob. It's DJ. Never meaning to be negative. This isn't what I call it.
I love when people preface a negative comment with something like that. You never mean to be negative, but here comes a negative comment.
But you know me, and the listeners know, most of the listeners know me, and you know that I love people and I love our community. But when I went to Bundy, they just didn't know what they were doing. They tried. They're nice people. They're good people. A lot of them are BUers, young, you know, people. But the reason I called, first I want to give my condolences to my pastoral colleague, Arthur Jones, whose son went to be with the Lord. And I also want to say some callers, I won't mention them, made fun of one of our greatest leaders right now, who was a major in the Army. He did three hero trips. One was Afghanistan. He's one of the greatest leaders. And you guys made fun of Major Peter Hegseth, saying he was a news reporter.
No, he wasn't a news reporter. He was a host on a cable show. He worked over at Fox Channel, the one that got sued for... Well, the one that settled a lawsuit for more than $787 million. That's the place where he worked. They got in trouble because they told lies about the 2020 election.
Well, you're not telling me anything new. He's not a news reporter. He's a major in the Army, and he's a great hero.
Yeah, well, you know, he certainly does have his supporters, and I'm one of them.
No, Bob, you're the one who said he was a Fox News reporter.
What? It's true. I mean, I don't recall saying he was a reporter. I thought he was a host on a Fox show. He has a lot more viewers than I'll ever have or had. His viewership was in the millions probably. So, no, I would never take away from his incredible, loyal Fox Cable audience?
Well, anyway, I forgive you and your cousin Vinny.
I don't need your forgiveness. I am not requesting forgiveness. I'd say Pete Hegseth, both his career at Fox Cable and also what he's done since becoming defense secretary, I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, he's doing the best he can.
Major Hegseth in the Department of War.
Defense Secretary Hegseth in the Department of Defense, DOD. There's no such thing as DOW, DOD, Department of Defense.
There is now.
Just like the Gulf of Mexico. Gum, not GUA. Gum, Gulf of Mexico, or GOM, not GOA. Anyway, always a pleasure, I'm sure.
Anyway, we need a Gulf of WMBF, brother.
Yeah, there you go. Like the one they used to have on Watson Boulevard, giant tank filled with cheap gas.
You know I love you, bro. Have a blessed day.
Thanks. 1118 WNBF, who's next as we play Radio Roulette? Hi, what's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, my name is Ron from Binghamton, New York. As usual, you know, I call with some ideas in mind, and then I hear a caller before me, and it gets me onto another track, and, you know, the Pete Hegseth thing. I will speak. I do not have a brilliant military career, but I was in the military, and I ran into officers. And first of all, let me mention, when it's mentioned as Major Hegseth, that's not a high rank. A lieutenant, you know what a lieutenant general or a four-star general think of a major? I mean, this is I don't want to say, but it's like pipsqueak land, you know?
But still, he's a good guy. We will agree that Peter Hegseth is a good guy.
Yeah, but to give a dressing down to brigadier, major, lieutenant, and four-star generals is really a strutting peacock kind of thing. You
right.
Know?
I thought that was really ill-advised. I mean, that Pete Hegseth is ever going to look to me for advice. I'd be the last person he'd call for advice. I just thought it was, whether it was his idea or whether it was President Trump's idea or whether they collaborated on that idea, I think the whole thing they did last Tuesday was poorly planned and, in the end, a huge waste of time and money on the part of everybody, including President Trump, including the defense secretary, including the hundreds of military people who had to be taken from their posts around the world and effectively putting the USA in harm's way while they were out of theater or wherever they do their jobs.
Yeah. You know, if you know anything about the attack on Pearl Harbor, prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, the planes, which were Army Air Force planes, were dispersed at the air bases, and the general in charge, General Short, had them all brought together because he thought sabotage could take place more easily if the planes were dispersed. So we brought them all together, which made them very easy for the Japanese when they did attack to hit the conglomeration of planes. In a sense, analogously, that's what Hegseth did. He brings all of the major officers, all of the generals and the highest ranking officers, the leaders of our military, together in one place. Not a good idea.
No, we're lucky. We're lucky, as far as I know, while all of those military leaders were out of position, as far as I know, it caused no major problems with the defense of our nation. But still, just the fact that it was publicized, the fact that it was out there, so everybody, our friends and enemies, knew that they weren't going to be at their assigned post probably for who knows, 24, 48, 72 hours. I say that put the nation's security at risk.
Yeah, and that's what you get when you put someone in charge of the Defense Department who doesn't belong in charge of the Defense Department. Now, I do not downplay the fact that Pete Hegseth was sent to Afghanistan, and he has a record which is a good record in the military. There's no doubt about it. And you could even, you want to call him a hero, call him a hero. But that doesn't mean...
I believe he's a hero. I believe, this is what I believe, Ron. I believe Pete Hegseth is an American hero.
Well, that's fine. But that doesn't mean he should be running the Defense Department any more than he should be running GM or Ford or U.S. Steel.
I agree. And that's, you know, again, nothing, taking nothing away from Peter Hegseth. I say he's a great American. He's a true hero. I thank him for his service to our great country. But having said that, maybe going back to Fox Cable is not a bad idea.
Well, hey, Bob, one other thing. I didn't call about Pete Hegseth. I was wondering, there was on the news just before you went on this hour, there was information, news about subway surfing. You know about that, right?
Yeah, I know about it. I'm not so dumb as to try it. I hate to, you know, invoke the name Darwin here, but so what did they say on the news? I missed it because I was ushering out our guest from Johnson City when the news came on.
Well, they mentioned that six people were killed last year subway surfing, and just recently, within a week or so, two people were killed subway surfing. And I really didn't know that was a thing, subway surfing. And
well, I think it's more of a thing now because of social media. They put their subway surfing onto the social media. And so I think that's why more subway surfing happens now. I see the story. I had not heard this, but since you brought it up, I see it says two girls were killed apparently Saturday because they were subway surfing.
Yeah. Now, are we going to have soon some subway surfing songs? You know, like Beach Boys type songs for subway surfing? Hello?
You really can't even dignify that with a response.
Come on, Bob. Subway surfing songs. It's a natural.
And probably, the sad thing is, probably on the internet, they're already on there. This country, you know, as much as we think in the race to the bottom that we're really close to hitting bottom, no, the race to the bottom continues and probably is going faster than ever. We're not close to the bottom. You think it's bad? No, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, we're gonna see an indication of that if during the Super Bowl intermission we have Bad Bunny singing subway surfing songs. I think that
was... Think about Bad Bunny. He would never... Bad Bunny knows better than to even bring that up. That's not the type of thing you bring up on radio, certainly.
Well, you know, he's going to... I'm talking about the Super Bowl, you know, so...
Why don't they call it what it is, the CTE Bowl? Now, as far as what happened, I'm reading this story now for the first time. So apparently it happened in Brooklyn. Cops get a call, 911, and the cops show up. They find... evidently two girls who were pronounced dead at the scene. And it says here, teenagers, mostly boys, have been killed or badly injured in recent years subway surfing, a practice that dates back a century but's been supercharged by social media. So I say, and you know me, I support the First Amendment and freedom of speech. I say all social media companies, and when I say all, I'm not kidding, all social media companies on the planet have an obligation to immediately delete anything that involves subway surfing or anything else that people do that could get them seriously injured or killed. I don't think it's a First Amendment issue. I'm not issuing an order on behalf of the government. I am issuing, or I'm making a statement on behalf of all Americans. So whether it's Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, whatever, Twitter, X, whatever these things are, every social media company ought to immediately delete anything involving subway surfing or any of these other things, and there have been dozens, if not hundreds, in recent years that will get people, especially young people, but not just younger people, that will get people seriously injured or killed. They shouldn't have to be forced to by the government. The government should not have a role in this. Good social media companies, if they want to prove that they're good social media companies, ought to announce as of now, as of 11:28 a.m. on October 6, 2025, any video, or even anything that's not even video, but any depiction of something that involves subway surfing or other things that could encourage people to engage in risky behavior will be deleted, and the people who post it will be not suspended, they'll be kicked off the platform forever.
Well, Bob, you know what? It's making me think of, I'm thinking of India. In India, when they say get on the train, people literally get on top of the train. You know, people in India ride on top of trains all the time. I wonder how they, you know, how many people they lose.
Who knows? Who knows? The Indian media probably don't report it because, as you point out, it's something, unfortunately, I believe, because of overcrowded trains that people do on a regular basis. No sane person would ever get on top of a train while it's in motion or when it's going to get in motion. As the guy who runs the New York City Transit Authority said in a statement, it's heartbreaking. Two young girls are gone because they somehow thought riding outside a subway train was an acceptable game. Parents, teachers, and friends need to be clear with loved ones. Getting on top of a subway car isn't surfing, it's suicide.
Well, you know, when I go to the airport and I'm told to get on the plane, I get in the plane.
Right. So again, if whether it's YouTube, any company, I'm being very clear here, probably too clear for some of our viewers, any company that's running any platform in the world ought to immediately take down anything that involves subway surfing or these other things that young people are doing that can get themselves or other people hurt or killed, and at the same time take down some of these other things where they're damaging property and putting it on the social media platforms. Just stop it. Government shouldn't have to step in. And the government, look at the government we have today. First of all, the government's not even open, so the government can't even step in if it wanted to because it's shut down. But social media companies could do a great service immediately and publicize it. Say, look, this is not going to take effect at the end of the month or the end of the week or the end of the year. It's in effect now. If you ever attempt to post a subway surfing video, we are going to shut down your account and you'll never get another account on our platform, ever. There's no appeal process. If somebody signs in, logs in using your account and you try to post subway surfing or anything else where people could get hurt badly or killed, you're out forever. And take it to the Supreme Court, because even they would agree. Because I'm sure the people the justices on the Supreme Court, all nine of them, agree there's no good excuse for social media to be featuring these videos. I'm Bob Joseph, though. That's just my opinion. I'm sure somebody may disagree. 607-772-1290. You're listening to WNBF Live. 11:36 at WNBF with Bob Joseph, just observing things, knowing full well it's not likely to get better anytime soon. Hey, I keep coming in though every day because I think one day I might be surprised. Here's the forecast from the National Weather Service. Summer continues now for two more days. Sunny this afternoon, high 82, mostly clear tonight, low 58. Partly sunny tomorrow with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, high 78. And mostly sunny on Wednesday, high 64. Right now, it's 70. Downtown Binghamton, WNBF. Take a look. WNBF.com, there it is in all its glory, the State Street parking garage. And, hey, who knows how many more hours it'll be open. I haven't heard when they'll actually decommission it. But if you take a close look at some of the pictures and videos, you might be excused for thinking, huh, maybe they could shut that down now. Hey, I'm no structural engineer. I'm just saying, you know, when they have structures or buildings or garages that collapse, and then they show you what the conditions were. Like, say, where was it? In Florida, not that long ago, there was a giant building. I think it was a condominium tower that collapsed. And they showed some people who are real structural engineers actually showed pictures on the internet of what the concrete and the rebar looked like in the inspection shortly before the ultimately the collapse of those buildings or structures. And I remember thinking, gee, it doesn't look that bad. I've seen worse here in Broome County. And yet, they don't close these places. So, I don't know. Take a cold, hard look at the State Street Garage and ask yourself, is that the type of place where you would park your car? Would you park your car? Look at that. And they've put all these little supports. I don't know. They want to shore up. As you can see, I mean, you look at the pictures, you can see what they're trying to do. And I give them an A for effort, trying to keep these beams up. It reminds me a lot of the Water Street, the old Water Street parking garage before they shut that down, too. They had, I think, one or two main beams in the center of the place that were like, well, whatever you do, don't sneeze or don't look at it the wrong way. Anyway, see for yourself. WNBF.com, as the mayor indicated, the plan is to shut it down and tear it down. And then next spring they can have a surface parking lot over at that site at the corner of State Street and Henry Street. In the meantime, I would keep a close look. Somebody, and I haven't personally seen any indication lately of any concrete chunks falling on vehicles, but somebody wrote that they are aware of concrete chunks that have fallen on vehicles. I know that used to happen over at the Collier Street garage and then at the Water Street garage before they were shut down, but I personally haven't noticed any concrete chunks falling on cars or people over here on State Street. So it's
probably. I'll keep you posted if they close it, obviously. I'll go over and do an update, because that would be quite big. 607-772-1290. What else is going on? You tell me. What happened over the weekend? We had a viewer who brought to my attention that the Yankees did not have a successful weekend in Toronto. And I acknowledge I actually missed that. I stopped following the Yankees last week after not once but twice they beat the Red Sox. So I thought, well, the Yankees apparently were the better team last week. So I figured it was all over. I figured they would go on and win the Stanley Cup or whatever they win. But apparently they, you know who I think they ought to take a closer look at? Aaron Boone. I'm no baseball expert. I'm just going to say Aaron Boone. After the dust is settled, I hope they have a talk with Aaron Boone about some of his decisions this year. I'm Bob Joseph. It's Monday morning, live on WNBF. Let's return to the phones on this Monday morning. Carol in Johnson City, you're on the air.
Good morning, Bob. Well, while I was waiting for you to come back to the phone, I did think of a couple of baseball comments that I'd like to make, and that is, baseball is not totally over with yet, and I'm talking about the majors. I have to call them Binghamton Mets. It's less syllables. It gets out faster. But the Rumble Ponies, I don't know how the participants get to go, if they're requested or if they request to go, but there isn't. And it's not the American Football League, but it's the AFL, which is the Arizona Fall League. And maybe one of the more prestigious, better record players get asked to go. I'm not exactly sure. I never asked anybody that question, so that's a good question to ask. But in view of the fact that they were such a fantastic team, my recommendation is if you come to the dinner, Meet the Mets dinner, they usually seat a ball player at your table, and you can get to talk to them after the dinner. And how I get enthused is if I have spoken to any of those guys, and you know something about, like, you know, where they're from, you know, what kind of personality they have to a certain extent. And, you know, and like you make, you know, you root for that person, and thus, you know, rooting for the whole team. That makes it more homey, you know, home-like. So that's just my recommendation. Anyway, the comment I wanted to make about the debate between Mayor Maney. Oh, yes, and Don, tell Don to stop calling him Mayor Meany. He's always says Meany. It's he should know by now that it's Maney. Anyway, when the other candidate made a comment about Johnson City reaching out to the population, how about the population getting off their duffs and going to the village board meetings? Myself and
another, maybe they don't want to. Maybe they don't want to get off their duffs.
Well, but let me finish, because that was like wasn't crazy. It was an unthinkable comment that she had made. How do you expect, you know, them to reach out to every individual, each person? I've been going to the Johnson City. I don't know if I ever said this before, but when I bought a house in 1985, I wanted to see my tax dollars at work. I have been going to those J.C. Village board meetings when Bonsick was mayor, and that was in 1985. And then he used to go to the ball games in 1992.
Right. Then what happened to him?
I didn't call to talk about Bonsick. I don't know. I'm just saying.
No, that's my point. You didn't even follow up to see what happened to him. He's no longer around here.
Well, who cares? I think he's in Florida, somebody told me. But the point is,
well, why isn't he still in Johnson City?
I called to make a comment about the comment that was made by the other candidate, not to talk about Mayor Bonsick. I just want to say that...
You mean Christina Cherik?
Yes. I don't know. She came out of the woodwork. I don't know where she's, you know, she did say she's Ukrainian, and she did say that she started her career in New Jersey but wanted to come back home. Well, that's very nice. But anyway, that's just the point I wanted to make, is if you want someone to know who you are and know what's going on, there's an agenda you could read.
Well, I'd be like with this program. If people would get off their duffs and stop just listening and start calling.
Yes.
See what I'm saying? Works both ways. It's not just for government. It's about for great radio programs. Get off your duff and call the program.
Well, I have many times, all the people I have ever talked to, the people that sit around me, you start conversations, and I usually wind up, Bob, telling them about the radio show.
And I'm glad you do. But do you tell them it's a great show to listen to, but it's a better show if you call in?
Yes, I will say, I'll remember to say that.
Tell them in no uncertain words, don't say I said, just pretend it's your idea. Just say, so listen to the show and get off your duff and call. Don't make it sound like it's me saying that, because that comes across as rude.
I would never reveal my sources.
All right. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
But seriously, folks, get off your duff and call. Or stay on your duff and have another cup of coffee and just listen to a live local talk program with a voice of reason named Bob Joseph. And always remember the call letters. WKRP in Cincinnati. It's a great Monday, isn't it? Yes, it is. Let's take a look at what has been coming into our Department of Email. Department of Email. Alan from Binghamton writes, I agree that planning is a good idea, but with such a rapid changing environment and technology, it has to be extremely difficult. I agree. It's difficult to plan ahead, and therefore, it seems to me, most communities aren't planning much at all. But could be wrong. Could be wrong. I do hold to my earlier comments about those involved in local planning. Boy, they don't want to be on the radio. It's unclear to me, because typically when you call, people engaged in some sort of planning activity with local governments, typically they use their technology to hide from the public and especially from reporters. So trying to get a clear answer on why they can't talk about their planning efforts is virtually impossible. Now, having said that, if anybody in Broome County or Tioga County is in a planning capacity for local government, say village, town, city, county, if you're in a planning capacity and would like to come on the program, contact me, bob@wnbf.com. I think it would be fascinating to hear about the efforts that you and your department are doing to appropriately plan for the future. Tell us. But you probably won't get any approval from the people who issued the gag order. Let's see what else here. More outrage from the outrage machine. There's only so much outrage I can deal with, especially on a Monday. You know, people manufactured outrage. We're all outraged. Of course you are. Let's see. Oh, the government shutdown. Oh, that's another thing. There's no real outrage around here about the federal government shutdown, so I seem to be a voice of one. I'm not using the word outraged. I've I certainly have gotten acclimated to the fact that our federal government is incapable of running like a normal organization. Now think about this. I don't care if it's a radio station, a TV station, a bank, a burger joint, DQ, whatever. If they just shut down every so often, wouldn't you have to wonder about who's running the thing? So that's the thing with the federal government. Perhaps the single most important thing overall in our lives, I'm not saying that your life has become unbearable or even that much different so far because the federal government is shut down. I'm just saying you would think the United States government, with all of its fine employees, all of its great department heads, and even the President of the United States, Donald Trump, you would think with all that high-paid talent from top to bottom, from Donald Trump all the way down to the lowest-paid federal government worker, with all the talent we have in U.S. government today, that somebody would have figured out a way by now to keep the federal government of the USA operating at all times. You know, this is, again, it's not even the cannabis stores. Have you noticed? The cannabis stores, once they open, they set their hours, they don't shut down. Why is it that the cannabis stores in Broome County have a better track record from an operational standpoint than the federal government? I rest my case until tomorrow morning, when I'll be back from 9 to noon. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy your afternoon. I'm Bob Joseph.
News, talk, and information for Binghamton and Central New York. This is News Radio WNBF Binghamton, a Town Square Media Station.